Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Last time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
It's tempting to veto, and I kind of think this might be one of the least worst Loxana episodes. And maybe there are dragons in the direction that we're heading that I need to save my weapons for.
There is no greater dragon than Loxana Troi, though.
I don't know if I agree with that, Adam.
And this is a sure thing, Ben. It's a sure thing. I need to do the responsible thing here, Ben, and veto the episode.
No!
This is a fully authenticated emergency action message.
Adam, you're such an idiot.
There is a Loxana ready to fire her missiles at us.
I do not concur, sir. I do not concur. Counter veto.
I should have known we would never get to use one of these. I'm the commander of this fucking ship, Ben.
And now, the conclusion.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, the Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm standing up right now, Ben. Got a stand-up desk.
Oh, you're one of those?
Stand and deliver pod. That's
I can't believe I'm in the middle of season 7 and I'm just finding this out. I feel so violated. I bet you have finger toe shoes also.
You have an image of me at hard at work, just chillaxed and hunched over.
That's how you
get a back injury at a desk job, Ben. You got to stand up.
Now I'm picturing you with jean shorts, finger toe shoes, standing desk, and one of those Razor scooters. Probably a vape pen too.
Ben, I'm insulted that you would think that. Of that list of items, I would own a pair of jean shorts. How dare you? Do not own any jean shorts, Ben, do you?
No, I don't.
You know what a hot move is? Is getting linen pants from the sale rack of your favorite store. Like, I'm talking like $10 pants. and then having them hemmed into shorts.
Having them hemmed? Hem your own short, Adam.
Really?
A hem stitch is the easiest stitch.
Fuck you, man. You're such a bastard, like hem shaming me.
I will happily hem shame anybody who doesn't hem their own shit.
Oh,
anybody
no,
can learn a hem stitch. Watch a 2-minute YouTube video. You don't need to pay the guy $15 to do it. And furthermore, don't buy $10 pants. Those pants are made by slave labor.
No, I'm talking about pants that were originally $200 in the like deep, deep sale rack because they're like $32.40 or something. Like they're of a length that no one would ever buy. And those are the perfect ones to make shorts out of.
All right, I see the logic in that.
God, I'm still reeling from the. From the hem shaming. I thought I was doing the right thing, and now it turns out I've been wrong the whole time.
Here's what I'll say, Adam. There's a way you can wiggle out of this. Is if you want a hem where you can see the seam.
That thing got a hem?
Yeah.
Sweet.
And you don't have a sewing machine. I can see taking that into somebody. But
of course I don't have a sewing machine.
Yeah, if you're just hemming, like if you're just making an invisible hem, like anybody can do this. Even I can.
You are such a dandy. I'm going to bring you my pants to turn into shorts. I'm going to turn this into a business arrangement.
Fuck you.
You see, you get me cornered and I just need to lash out. I need to punch back. Makes me sad, Ben. Speaking of grief. Well, this episode is about addressing grief. Isn't it?
I guess it is. I guess I'm kind of grieving this Marin. Like, we started the show with a blank slate, a tabula rasa, if you will. We could have done anything with this Marin open, and instead, this is what we did.
Do you want to start over?
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Let's just fucking review the show.
Fine. It's season 7. Episode 7. Dark Page.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
It's a Lwaxana episode, Adam.
You tell me this episode isn't about grief? It is entirely about grief.
I didn't disagree with you. It's about grief. Are we mad at each other because we mutually assured vetoed each other? Is that what's going on here? We haven't addressed it, really.
The post-veto reversal episodes are always a bit angsty.
Yeah. We are also, like, we're recording this episode weeks and weeks and weeks ahead of when it will come out. And I can only imagine the shitstorm that we've stirred up online with our 7 consecutive seasons of fucking the veto up.
I'm really looking forward to not paying attention to any of those threads, as I always do.
You cannot hurt me!
I do a fair amount of reading about how our viewers feel about our program, but if any of those threads question our motivations, I'm not having it. I know what my motivations are. They are true and honorable.
I'll believe it when I see it, Adam. This episode is one of many Lwaxana episodes that starts with a bit-o comedy about how annoying Lwaxana is. Which is, I'm sure we've talked about this before, but like if you're in the writer's room and you're writing this scene about how annoying it is, like are they kind of making fun of Majel Barrett?
See, that's what I was wondering. Like, at what point is your character the butt of the same joke so long that you think that you're being typecast?
Yeah, I mean, she's kind of laughing all the way to the bank, right? Because she keeps getting these episodes and keeps getting them in Deep Space Nine, too.
Yeah, she got an action figure.
I have mine right here.
She's legit. So the Lwaxana's rapping with Picard about these new aliens, these Cairns. These Cairns, up until now, only spoke telepathically. Lwaxana's rapping with Picard about how...
If 2 Cairn were having this conversation, it would have been over minutes ago.
Really?
They couldn't communicate with anyone who was non-telepathic, so that's why I'm here. I got a new job. It's great.
It's kind of a job as sort of a
translator.
It's a bit of a payoff of the idea of the Darmok episode. They could tell that everybody was flying around the galaxy doing intelligence, but they could not crack the code of how to communicate with them.
That's what the Darmok episode needed. Just a thick spread of Lwaxana. So that when you squeeze the episode halves together, the Lwaxana just shoots out the sides.
Gross.
Lwaxana is really the tartar sauce of Star Trek The Next Generation characters. You know, in Canada, they dip their fries in Lwaxana.
Yeah, but it only counts if you're, like, drunk, right?
Yeah. And Picard's like, great, that's so interesting. Awesome. I would rather talk to someone who has a feeble grasp of my language than talk to you. Thanks. So he's like, he does that thing like when you're stuck talking to someone at a party. He's like, oh, I see someone that I want to talk to over there.
I got to go organize my sock drawer on the other side of the room.
Yeah. And then Picard is introduced to Mock and his daughter, who is played by Kirsten Dunst.
How do you pronounce this guy's name? McQuiss?
I almost want to boot up the episode to get this right.
I'm going to listen to it in the episode while we're sitting here. You vamp for a second.
Oh, shit.
I'm going to play. I'm like right queued up to when Loxana walks up to him.
McQuiss, this is the beautiful daughter I've been telling you about, Deanna.
McQuiss.
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 Why don't you McQuiss like a tree and introduce me to your daughter, Kirsten Dunst?
I'm going to go ahead and say, Adam, I regret not allowing your veto to go through.
Exactly. I feel like we could do this episode in 10 minutes. This was a classic case of I've got a slug line for a story and not much else. Let's pad this fucker. Let's pad it so hard.
It's a slug line, and it's also just like, okay, what was the premise of the last episode? Bad dreams causing problems for everybody? All right, well, let's just do that again, and then let's bring a guy that looks like very much like the guy that was doing the raping in the other episode where Loxana is a guy who is played for how dangerous he may be because he looks so much like that guy.
He's got telepathic rape face.
Exactly. And he's played for that. Like, we suspect him all the way up to the middle bit of the episode where Troy wakes up in Six Bay and sees him like leering at her mother in the dark.
He's got a face that looks like a murder weapon.
Yeah. When I meet a guy like this in real life, I like stand in between him and my wife, you know?
Yeah. Got to keep an eye on this guy.
Yeah. Also, his daughter is Kirsten Dunst. Did you have a drunk Shimoda, Adam?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
yeah. I do, actually. God, we should just fucking kill this episode. Let's go hard on this episode. What do you say?
Here's what I'm going to suggest, Adam. I'm going to pause the playback right now. I'm already like two sips into a beer, but I'm going to go down and get the rest of the six pack.
All right, I'm going to load up too. I don't have a shoot to be today.
All right, I'll be right back.
Ben, this is one of the best ideas you've ever had. We had to get drunk for this episode. I got two beers on the table and a few more close by.
Okay, I love it. I ran downstairs. I only had three beers in the house, including the one I'm already into. So I may need to switch to harder stuff if I drink at the rate I predict that I will.
Did you hear the Jordan Jesse Go episode where the guest was talking about what I had known before then as the Century Club, but he had talked like 60 and 60, like 60 shots of beer in 60 minutes?
Oh, Power Hour.
The Power Hour.
Century Club is 100 shots of beer in 100 minutes. A Power Hour is 60 and 60.
I have only ever done the Century Club.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I don't fuck around with a Power Hour.
I've done the Power Hour twice, both in college.
You didn't learn the first time.
The first time I did it, we were watching 24, which was a great TV show to watch while you do the Power Hour.
Yep.
The second, and we did it with Natty Light or something, which is not good beer, but it's the right beer to do that type of project with. Because the second time, I did it with the short-lived Budweiser energy drink beer, B to the E.
Oh, no.
Do you remember that product?
Were you guys a test market for that?
It was heavily marketed in New York City, and New York City's not typically a test market as far as I know. But
did you drink this beverage in a room with a two-way mirror?
We want to see
a guy with a clipboard watching you.
If this is a power hour enhancement beverage or what? But man, we were like 30 shots in and we were like, this is a bad idea.
Your pupils are like giant.
My pupils are bigger than my face.
Oh no. So you got a DNF on that one, on that power hour.
That second power hour, yeah, stopped before it really started.
Oof. The one and only time I did the Century Club, I took my last 8 shots over the toilet. A toilet that I was carried to.
Mm. Yeah, well, there's...
You know, you get that far, you have to complete, Ben.
You have to complete, and also, you can't walk yourself to the toilet. You're too busy doing shots.
Yeah. Oh boy. Well, let's make the deal. Let's not power hour this episode, Ben, but let's make the deal between you and me to just drink as fast as possible.
I concur. The counselor's mom is not looking great in this episode. She's like, they've penciled in.
You need to be more specific, Ben.
Oh, Luoxana?
No, about not looking great. See, that's mean. I already turned mean. I'm a mean drinker.
She's got like dark circles drawn under her eyes. She's not her normal booby self. She's wearing very, very conservative clothing. That even gets commented on.
There's a real lack of décolletage here.
Yeah. Yeah, got to get that décolletage out.
Is that the right way to say that word?
I'm assuming it's from the French, and they would pronounce it décolletage.
Of course they would. You say decamato, I say decamato.
Let's call the whole thing off, Adam.
Uh-huh.
She's exhausted because she has done the amazing feat of learning how to communicate with these people. They have a telepathic mode of communication and communicate entirely in imagery, which is not the way Betazoids do their telepathy. But the Karen have put on like little voice boxes and are learning to talk out loud like the rest of the Federation. And I guess they're under consideration for being admitted to the Federation.
You see a little bit later, like the effect, like the difference between being a Betazoid that ingests telepathy verbally versus the way that the Cairn do it. And it's like,
you get to drink from the fire hose!
It's like when Bill Pullman goes and has his powwow with the captured alien in Independence Day. He sees the whole thing.
Yeah, I've seen it all.
They're a little weirded out by the fact that when they talk to Luoxana, they don't see all of it.
Yeah. Something mysterious about this woman. Can't quite put my finger on it.
Or in it. Because it's a black hole in his description. And Troy's like, oh, that's just shit she doesn't want you to know about. She's a private person.
Yeah, I mean, she will never shut up in any situation ever, but even she has some things she keeps to herself.
But that's just the thing. I mean, like, I feel like this is such a blatant retcon of the way Betazoids are supposed to be, right? Like, wasn't there a whole episode where she was, like, shocked and appalled at how people kept secrets from each other on The Entrepreneur?
Yeah.
So now she's a super private person who keeps secrets shoved down deep?
Look, I think we know from a couple episodes ago that the producers of the show have given up at this point. It's over for them. They're just... They've got scripts and they're just cramming them into a meat grinder and then like... Like, script meat is coming out the bottom, and they're just, like, turning that into cash.
They're like, look, We've just got to shit out 20 more episodes of this show, and then we can all retire.
That's all we have to do, just 20 more. A number of episodes per season that will be the standard forever. No one will ever do fewer than 26.
No one will ever question the wisdom of spending this much time and money when you don't have as many good ideas as the number of episodes you have to deliver.
We get, speaking of cost savings, we get a couple of scenes in the Arboretum, a place that we have seen a little bit before. But Ben, I've seen better Arboretums in the lobby of a courtyard by Marriott.
Oh!
Like, whoa!
Courtyard by Marriott presenting this episode.
There's a freebie courtyard.
Yeah. Courtyard by Marriott is the inexpensive millennial version of Marriott. It's not even the nice Marriott.
Ben, we're made to believe that people go on dates in the Arboretum. They go for walks throughout the Arboretum. Ben, is that walk just like 30 feet in circumference, basically? Is that what it takes to circumnavigate the Arboretum?
I think when Keiko was on board, the implication was that there was like a much bigger space with like trees and shit that they just never panned over to. But they don't. They've despaired of implying that here. It's just a room with grass instead of carpet.
They certainly have despaired. Abandon all hope. All
all you
all ye
enter
who
here.
Enter the Arboretum.
Kirsten Dunst seems to like it.
I kept on hoping for koi in this pond. I love a koi pond. Seems to be just a standard pond. Just a tepid pool. Basically a drowning danger to anyone who plays there. I think the existence of the Arboretum proves one thing, and that is it must be wildly difficult to get holodeck time on this ship. Because if you could, there'd be no need for this basement with ferns in it.
This Arboretum is scarcely better than the fucking room with the screen that shows an image of a forest that Ripley goes to. There's two kids playing in this Arboretum, and one of them is definitely wearing the same costume as the older girl in the episode where Picard and the three children have to like crawl around in the Jeffries tubes.
Oh, right.
Was that Disaster?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll always remember the episode titled Disaster as the one where Troy's captain.
Unmistakable, same costume.
Yeah.
Actually, the little boy might be wearing Jay Gordon's costume. So put that in your pipe and smoke it.
They burned all the cash on the Arboretum set.
That sweet, sweet Arboretum set where they got half as many ferns as they usually do from the Ace Garden Center.
They should have holodecked this. I don't understand its existence.
I mean, here's the thing, Adam. Like, how expensive would it have been to get like a 30-foot by 30-foot flat and go into an actual forest and put the flat up and just have that be the wall that they come through?
I thought the same thing. I also thought, I wonder if all the good plants died when Keiko left. Like, maybe she was really important to the upkeep of the Arboretum. And now that she's gone, it's just a garbage pile.
Well, one thing that's garbage is the rocks around the little water feature, because Kirsten Dunst is walking around them. One of the rocks gets loose. She falls in the drink. Everybody's having a laugh, and then they realize that Lwaxana has also fallen.
Mother!
And she can't get up. They wheel her into Six Bay, and they're doing an exam on her. And I believe Dr. Crusher says,
it's almost as if her brain has shut itself down.
Much like I felt watching this episode, Ben.
Were you up on the late night watching this?
I was indeed.
There's something kind of soul-crushing about turning your favorite TV show into work and then having to cram for your podcast the next day.
Most of the time, this is 90% fun. Occasionally, when you're trying to cram episode production ahead of a tour, like the way we're doing, it's more task-based.
Yeah.
I say as I'm almost done with my first beer.
Oh, I'm into my second, buddy.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it's almost as if her brain has shut itself down. And basically what she's described is a Lwaxana Troi in a persistent vegetative state, but the only part of her brain still active is the weird Betazoid part. That's the only reason they're not contemplating an unplugging.
Just flushing her out the airlock?
Yeah.
I lost my father a long time ago, but I lost my mother in a way that didn't leave me feeling very much closure. It's not so much that she died, but that she slipped away slowly.
I threw throwing star after throwing star at the body of my mother. There was nothing on my belt that could help her.
There's no grappling hook strong enough to pull someone back from an abyss like that.
Curiously absent from this scene is one Jean-Luc Picard, who I think can't be bothered with the idea of Lwaxana's death.
Yeah,
he's in his condo playing the flute, but like playing tunes that are a little happier than you might expect.
Never took one lesson. He does help Troi kind of put the screws to Mequis?
Mequis?
Maquez?
Mequis?
Did they...
With an apostrophe?
Were they going to write Maquis?
Mequis?
Like the terrorists? And then... Did they just recycle his name for the terrorists?
God, I don't know. You just read his name. How did we forget it already?
Who fucking cares about this guy's name?
Mequis?
What's up with his Templar loaf?
Yeah, they all have big-ass temple loaf.
It's gotta be hard to get a good haircut when your head's shaped like that. You basically can only get the Dick Tracy flat top cut.
I feel like this is an alien species that needs to convert to Christianity. They need Jesus to come clean out the temple.
You know what's great about that joke, Ben, is that anyone who would have heard it has already shut off the pod by now. It's just us now, Ben. It's you and me. And maybe this is appropriate. Maybe this is how we should end our show.
Not with a bang, but with a fart.
Whew. All right.
What are you drinking today, buddy?
I am drinking Fremont Summer Ale.
Mm.
It's an American pale ale.
Yum.
It is delicious. It is... Daniel from Maximum Fun shouted us out a while ago for coining the term porch beer.
Porch beer.
And this is a little meatier than what I would consider a porch beer. A little too much flavor for porch use, but still very good. Very toothsome as a beer goes.
Sure. I'm drinking a beer from Six Point Brewery called The Jammer. And it's like a... Are you down with these Goza beers that all the kids are drinking, Adam?
Are those like pot sticker beers?
They're like a sour, like a German-style sour.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I do like them. You know what? I like them when I'm out, but I have not bought any for home consumption.
These have a bit of coriander and salt in them, so they kind of taste a bit like a chilada. Like they got a little chilada thing going. A little lower alcohol. I think you would find this to be a totally acceptable porch beer if I had to put money on it.
The defining characteristic of a porch beer is the ability to slam like six of them And anything with a pronounced flavor like that, anything that veers toward Chilada Town, I feel like that would get pretty old after two. Is that not the case? You'll have to let me know after four, which will happen at about 10 minutes for you.
It is a guiding principle on which Darth Vader's base. Have you not find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth? You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
They've got Temple Loaf guy in here. And speaking of jamming, he beams his thoughts into Troy's head. And like maybe more than any other scene, this is the one where we are concerned that it may be going in the direction of the most upsetting episode of Trek.
Yeah, I mean, Troy is almost blown back in her seat, like fingernails in the conference room table style, like taking it from this guy.
It's like the Maxell tape ad.
Yeah.
And it goes on like you think that Picard should have probably hit him over the back of the head with a chair to stop him.
Yeah, like a wild, rabid dog who has sunk his teeth into a leg. Like, you got to do anything you can to get those jaws open.
It'd be like if you're sitting in a room with two people and one of them casually takes out a hand drill and just sticks it into the other person's leg and starts drilling. And you just, like, waited a good 3, 4, 5 Mississippi before you told them to stop.
Stop it.
Like, the timing in this scene is super weird.
It could also be like the sort of surprise panic that always slows things down for a decision maker. Like, I could see being a little bit detached and weirded out by the scene before like sort of snapping out of it and then throwing that chair, as you've suggested.
Right. So what they get from this is that it's not that Loxana just had some private thoughts, but that there's something like eating her inside. There's some part of her psyche that is unwell.
I mean, the exposition that we get for this is like there's something about the Betazoid psyche that will sort of eat itself out of self-preservation, right? Like there's something destructive happening to her mind. It isn't just a firewall. Like, it's being damaged.
Yeah, her psyche stepped in a bear trap and is now chewing its own leg off.
Right. The plan that gets proposed to fix this is like plugging Deanna's mind into Maquez.
Maquez?
And then plugging Maquez into Loxana.
It's the exact same plan as the last episode. It's let's go into the dream and solve the problem from in there.
Yeah. It's like jump starting a mind car. You got the cables all willy-nilly. You gotta put your clamp, your black clamp, and then your red clamp.
Yeah. That's what it's like, Adam.
Yeah, so Troy gets to walk around another dreamscape, much like Picard and Geordi got to. The only difference is the lighting is a bit different this time.
They're like, we got this wide-ass lens.
Yeah, we don't have to return it until tomorrow, so
let's write another dream sequence. What do you say?
Yeah. This time, like, you could make the case that this dream is more out there than Data's dream because there are things like hallways to nowhere and condos that lead to Troy as a baby.
That fucking wolf, too.
There's some wolf times with a real wolf.
Yeah. Have you ever been in the presence?
I have not been in the presence of a wolf.
I went to kind of a hippy-dippy high school, and my one of our morning meetings one morning, they had like some wolf conservationists come to talk to us about the importance of wolf conservation, and they brought a wolf. Oh my God, wolves are scary, dude.
Yeah.
Like, it was one wolf in a room of like, you know, 350 kids and teachers, and it was terrifying to be in a room with a wolf.
They've got kind of stiltsy legs.
Yeah.
And their eyes are really slitty.
It's like seeing a gun, you know? You're like, that thing is there for killing me with. Like, that's all it's there for.
I read in the show notes for this that no one wanted to be around the wolf. And the wolf was actually screened and comped in. Like, when Kirsten Dunst pets the wolf later, she's petting a stump.
Whoa.
Comping the wolf afterwards.
They did a good job with that comp.
The wolf terrorized everyone.
Wolves are scary as fuck, and they're, like, not that trainable, you know?
They're that sort of animal that's too smart for training.
They're not domesticated, and if they were, they wouldn't look like a wolf.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Troy sees her dad. All the shit going on this first time she's in the dream is, like, Wolf and the dad and Picard all trying to, like, stop her finding her mom.
It's sort of like the haunted house trope of when the kids are getting close to the answer of the mystery. Loxana's mind is doing everything it can to get Troy out of here, to distract it with something, to like break her down in a way. And teasing her with her dad is like especially cruel.
Deanna.
Daddy?
Because her dad died when Troy was very young.
It's that thing that can happen when you get in a fight with a very dear loved one, is that you know where all of their soft spots are.
I'm sorry I had to go away when you were so little.
Don't do this.
And that if you can't control yourself, that can be a bad, bad thing.
Who knows where you are the most sensitive more than your mother?
Yeah, don't get in a fight with your mom, jerks.
Yeah.
It's like don't pick a fight with somebody who buys ink by the barrel. Or your mom.
That's the saying.
So the thing that Loxana is suffering from has to do with some trauma, but they can't figure out like what trauma she could be dealing with. And Picard and Troy... Picard is like really the buddy cop in this episode. It's a Troy episode with Picard buddy copping the entire time. Like, is Worf even in this?
God, I don't know.
Oh, he's in the party at the beginning. He has even less shit to do in this episode than he did in the last one.
He's really taking some time off. I think he's considering that offer from Deep Space Nine.
Michael Dorn is like, hey guys, I'm fine with coming in and standing around and not saying anything, but can I not be a Klingon for this episode?
Here's the thing. I'm getting paid so little, there better be food on set for me to eat. So I only want to participate in buffet scenes and scenes where there are sheet cakes. That's really been his deal. There's been a lot of craft service, like on-camera craft service this season.
Party Worf.
Yeah.
They find Loxana's journal, which she's kept for decades.
There's a 7-year gap.
Hand deleted by Loxana herself. And they're like, that's got to be it. And it's like right around when Troy was born that this block, this missing block ends.
My mother's so diligent about her journal. Why would she have stopped making entries for so long?
We go into this second Inception dive, and this is the one where Troy, like, walks down a hallway and the doors open and there's just space on the other side and she, like, jumps out. One of the best images this show has ever done. A shame to use it on this episode.
She did the whole stunt person jumps into an air mattress thing. Like, that was totally practical.
It looks great.
I mean, not jumping into space. That part was an effect. I'm not sure if you knew that. But, yeah, she actually jumped off of a deck into a thing.
Wait, so they didn't actually go to outer space to shoot that scene?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Well, that's a little disappointing.
Yeah.
She
did not break her coccyx on the fall, though.
They wake up in the dream life.
I feel like that's a product that we could have. The Marina Sirtis coccyx donut. That's a bit of merch I'll have signed at the next convention.
My love is a fever, long and chill for that which longer nurses the disease. Tell me more, you'll have to go again.
She arrives after she jumps out of the ship in the Dreamscape Arboretum. And there is Loxana, who is having a meltdown. And what is revealed here is that Loxana and what was her dad's name?
Mequis?
Turns out Loxana and her human husband used to have another daughter, and this other daughter died chasing her dog in a park when she was 7 years old and when Deanna was just a baby. Little Kestra. And Loxana has, like, gone through her life just suppressing this and not dealing with the fact that she lost a child. And once again, Rachel Barrett is given a colossal task in terms of how do you perform this scene. And I don't know, what was your review of her performance?
I honestly think that this was the best Majel Barrett performance that we've seen on the show. I found her emotions very real feeling and affecting.
I agree. I think that I'm really biased against her. Like, she comes into these things with a big handicap.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen the other times, and I think she kind of redeemed her skill. Like, she's always given this scene. Every single time she comes on the show, she's given this scene where she has some, like, really major emotional shit she needs to deal with. And this is, like, the only time I can think of where I thought it was actually good.
I think credit where credit is due. She had to emote something awful, and I found her performance utterly believable and great. And I felt for her. Like, you know, the magic trick of making you feel sorry for someone that you don't like,
right,
is a greater effort than feeling bad for someone who you have neutral feelings about or even like. So to conjure that, I thought, was a great success.
I also thought this scene was successful because they have this little girl cast that is like is Kestra, the girl that Kirsten Dunst is reminding her of. Really nice casting, because it's like you see the resemblance, but it also looks like it could plausibly be like a relative of Deanna Troi. That's a tough needle to thread.
We're lavishing a lot of praise on Majel Barrett, but I think we should also call attention to Marina Sirtis here too, who is not in full breakdown, but upon having the realization that she had a sister that she never knew, who died when she was an infant, she delivers her own very powerful performance around that knowledge as well.
It's just amazing that this fucking three-ring circus of an episode culminates in this kind of a scene.
There's three good minutes in this episode, and these are them. I wonder how much they talked about the proportionality of the breakdown, because you can't have Deanna and Loxana break down in equal measure. Like you've
now
got
if
it-
you're designing an emotional scene, you're going to need to consider the proportionality of the emotional breakdown on either side of the triangle.
I like using a protractor to determine the proper angle of the tears. That way, you can set down a bucket to catch all the associated moisture.
This character we've got doing a full-blown ugly cry, and therefore, we've decided to make this other character contain herself a little bit, but still reveal some vulnerability.
I like to put down a couple of bags of silica gel. That way, you keep the humidity down on the location.
It's just a great product. It's available at your local hardware store. You know where they make that silica gel?
No.
Desica 6.
Yep. That's the callback everyone was going for.
Yeah, they were like, remind me of a throwaway joke from 3 or 4 episodes ago, please.
Ben, you know that the wolf in this episode, his name was Buck? His brother was named Teddy. These are the wolves from Dances with Wolves who play Two Socks. These are star Damn. Wolves.
Buck Wolf was also my porn name in the 80s.
Yeah. The button on the episode is the slow pull reveal of Waxana and Troy holding hands in side-by-side six-bay cot. The feeling is that Waxana is going to get out of this. The mental mission is successful, and the truth has been revealed.
They look at like a picture of Kestra together, and they're gonna like sort through all the fifis.
Yeah, there's the family that you present to the world, but then there's the true family. There's the dark shit that your parents hide that I think is more common than people think. And this episode was a way to consider that.
That's true. At least it had that going for it.
Did you like this episode?
I can't say I like the episode. I was very relieved that it didn't wind up being a rape episode.
Yeah.
Because it really, like literally until like the halfway mark, I was so worried about that. And, you know, I do think it has that good handful of minutes at the end. But I think largely it's kind of a catastrophe.
It's so frustrating to watch this show stagger to the conclusion. Because you know there is a great finale coming. Like, it becomes even more of a mystery as to how they were able to make a great finale during this season, when episode after episode it is clearly playing out the string. It's weird.
I hope we're not bumming everybody out with our feeling down on it this season. I think there's still some good episodes.
Yeah, there are. I am definitely looking forward to a few that I can think of. But yeah, this is not one of them. Let's check those P1s, Ben.
Let's check them shits.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental
income? Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, we've got a personal priority one message here from Conan. In parentheses, the guy who sucks, plus I got depression. And it is for all chochachos, both near and far. Message goes like this. This message is probably reaching y'all after ChochachaCon 2017. But hopefully we were able to get real nice on much crispy Stella's and bless the reins together once again. Hell of such as meow to the Cho who turned me onto the pod. And thanks to Adam and Ben for providing an excellent momentary distraction on the road to the grave. I think I got through that line read perfectly. I read it and then I reread it and I was like, no, that was right. Hell of such as meow to the Cho. Yeah. Got it right. Well, Conan, it sounds like things are getting better for you. I certainly hope they are. And due in large part to all the chochachos out there.
Yeah. What's a chochacho?
I believe it is a friend that you share nachos with.
Oh.
Not to be confused with someone you share chicharrones with, which is a chochicharroncho. No?
No.
That was a beer joke, Ben. I'm blaming that one on the beers.
Yeah, that's the beer's fault. Adam, our second priority one message here is a personal message from Ryan. It's for Daniel. It goes like this. My dear friend Daniel, this message represents another 100 American dollars that I did not spend on your wedding gift. Is this the last Jumbotron message I bought you? Who knows? Enjoy wondering when, where, or if the next one will come.
Ryan, I'm so sorry that no one stuck around long enough to listen to this. It's really a shame. It's all our fault. We thank you nonetheless.
Well, our thanks to everybody who sent a Priority One message. If you'd like to send a Priority One message, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. And it's just a great way to support the proceedings of this a here podcast.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
In an episode that may be a Shimoda itself, did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I did. I'm going to give my Shimoda to the props department on this episode. If you go to 16 minutes and 5 seconds, you can see what I'm talking about here. This is an episode where they clearly didn't spend much money on anything, but they definitely spent like $250 on a fucking horn of plenty of like persimmons and cactuses and eggplants and shit on this plate.
1605.
It's just like the room that Maquis is in.
Maquis?
Uh-huh.
And they do this shot where the camera like swings around as Picard and Troy and Maquis are talking. And there's just this unbelievably conspicuous plate of vegetables and fruit in the middle of the table.
It's the most lit thing in the entire scene.
It's very distracting. It's very weird looking and very unusual for Star Trek, I think.
That glass coffee table looks like it's on top of a base of cinder blocks.
Yeah, it kind of does.
And there's some sunflowers in the back?
The fuck is going on in this scene?
I sort of admire the attention to set dressing here because there is so little attention paid to anything else.
Yeah, they're clearly like, well, fuck it. We don't have much to work with, but we're going to have some fun.
Are those just extremely long, futuristic green beans?
I think they are extremely long green beans.
It's a horn of plenty without the horn.
All plenty, no horn. Sad.
This episode's terrible, Ben. I don't have a Shimoda. I abstained. Like, there was so little that was fun or funny about it. Your hornless of plenty is great. I would piggyback onto this.
Oh, well, but Adam.
I might go just more broadly in a what were they thinking kind of way. The attention that they paid to things like the vegetable platter in this condo and the attention they didn't pay to things like story or
the arboretum.
Yeah, boy, that arboretum.
Like, presumably the same people were in charge of the vegetable platter and the arboretum, right?
I love the idea that they gave the arboretum to the intern and the full timer was in charge of the horn of green beans. That is not a good delegation of roles there. And I was inspired to just maybe fuck off with my Shimoda. So there.
Darmok, Angelad, and Tanagra.
Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe, another candle, slippers, a sweater, flowers. We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one, an Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too. Because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures every time you send one to it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is coming up. And one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped.
This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leader in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
What do we have coming up for the next episode, Ben?
The next episode is Season 7, Episode 8, Attached, Imprisoned, and Telepathically Joined by an Alien Race. Picard and Beverly are forced to face the feelings they have always had for each other. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
I do remember this episode, Ben. It's as close as we get to a real Picard Beverly love fest, which is to say, not that close. Yeah, they play a mental game of just the tip, don't they?
Well, once again, we find ourselves early in a season with no vetoes left to talk about. Maybe we should never talk about vetoes ever again, Adam.
I think that's super fair. With all of the vetoes in the rearview mirror, no need to bring them up. I think we've done a great job these 7 seasons in our use of the veto, our use and counter use of a weapon we never should have been trusted with.
That's the logic of a very drunk man, Adam.
It's very true. The most logical thing to do right now would be to thank any viewers who stuck around this long in both the totality of our show, but also this episode specifically. If for whatever reason you decide to support our show, there are ways you can do that. Supporting our show unlocks some benefits to the supporters, Ben.
That's true.
By supporting our show at MaximumFun.org/donate, you unlock our special Crimson Tide episode and a live episode that we recorded while out on tour.
Yeah, and I mean, chances are pretty good that that's going to start having more bonus episodes in it sooner rather than later, right?
I would understand if after this episode you were interested in retracting support for the show, financial or otherwise. I understand. I would ask you, fair viewer, to hang on just a little while longer. I think it's going to get better again. It gets better.
It's a good appropriation of that very well-meaning effort to prevent suicide in the LGBT community.
Boy, you, like... You know, like there's dumping cold water on a joke. Like my cold water was on like the dunk tank seat.
I blasted it with that cryogenic shit that they use to freeze warts off.
You ran up and slammed the button and dumped it into the cold water. You couldn't be bothered with the softballs, man. Well done. Way to know you asshole me.
I didn't just dump cold water on a joke. I dumped all cold water everywhere on all jokes, Captain Picard.
Rishon was not a fan of humor. Ours was in an entirely joke-free household.
We ask you to take your shoes and your jokes off and leave them in the mudroom.
Our thanks to Dark Materia for our theme music, Adam Ragusea for our supplemental music. You can find us, if you choose to, on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. I'm on there as @CupForTime. Ben is on there as @BenjaminRAHR. We've got Facebook pages, groups. We have Reddit pages. We have merch. We have a tour that we're about to go out on. It's all happening, Ben.
It's all happening.
Would you believe this is a real and legitimate podcast program? With all of the accoutrements.
It's possible.
Well, with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. And an episode of The Greatest Generation, in which Ben and I will be too scared to tell each other that we love the other person.
I used to have a job on this show. I guess I don't now.
First time for everything. Does it make you feel any better that I did so bad?
No.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.